I'm going to read six poems. The final five are from my new book. But the poems in the new book were all written between around 1993, 1994, and 1999. And Norma and I have only been married a year and a half. So I have to read a love poem for her, which isn't in the book. It also has to be a bit restricted on subject matter because she doesn't like risque love poems that feature her read in public if she's present. Pegasus Rising. Since the factory's been shut, small insects can be heard, and night's flimsiest breeze through the toothache tree moves enough leaves to notice. Could such quiet exist right after creation, before greed, lust, or war? I lie beside Norma, her slow breath following her final orgasm, so soft the darkness fails to stir. And I touch her chest lightly to make sure and feel foolish to doubt. Full summer, the shadows retain the heat of Norma's love cries, her fingers clutching my hair. But now all sleep's blessings are hers. High overhead, I watch the sickle moon transcend summer's branches. Later, Pegasus Rampant will gallop up from the east. And the next poem I want to read, well, actually, it's also not in the new book. It's in the next book. I'm going to read it because it won an Amy Trich Needle Award. And that's a special award, I think, because unlike other literary prizes that are given by a flock of professors or so-called experts on poetry or editors or critics or some such people, this award is awarded by people who read and need the poetry, actually people like yourself who vote for poems that they like. So this award was given to me by the people. And it honors my grand aunt, Magdalene Florence Mueller Belts, who lived for many years in Meadocks Run, Pennsylvania. And I wrote this poem in honor of her. And it's true what I say in the poem, that I could not find her house today because a year ago I drove through Meadocks Run and looked for her house and couldn't find it. Meadocks Run. In the back country, 24 miles beyond Dubois, lay Meadocks Run, abandoned, then forgotten by the swelling tides of empire. So remote from any seat of power, Elk County was known to city folk only for its wolves and winter. No place of purchase for Lowell's Luciferian children. Here the snake in the woodpile was simply that, a reptile after rodents, not our souls. Mere days after I turned 12, Grand Aunt Maggie died, so birthday slid into funeral like an early December snow. That year, the first atomic power plant opened at Shippingport, not that anyone noticed. But we all noticed Sputnik that autumn, cleaving cold skies like a wizard's conjuring sign. With our telescopes, we were open-eyed as jack-o'-lanterns standing in the field. We thought time jumped a century in a day. Poor Aunt Maggie, no Yorkshire Puritan she, but carved of stout Germanic stock, the kind that fled their Teutonic princes to build up Germantown in the shimmer of William Penn's New World dream. She lived so far off the paved road that shadowed Bennett Creek, I could never find her house today. In my youth, I thought it was the edge of the world, such great forests sweeping away above her yard. The collie roamed the woods at will. Her house was small, each room utilized for maximum economy. Her kitchen smelled of four-square German cookery. How our 1950 Ford would climb the hill and low into a glow of daylilies pushing out into the lane. A sturdy village of people hardened by hard work, their features sharpened as the seasons turned. Back then, one good job could keep a family. These days, only death seems to summon us together. I last saw her daughters, Genevieve and Florence, at my grandmother's graveside. My one remaining passed-down keepsake, a child's chair made in Austria over a century past. Towns take to logging or dry up like gourds rattling on winter vines. Perhaps the dreams run out of time. But on my final visit, hollyhocks burst with beauty by her door. Thank you. My wife will tell you that I'm really a happy, joyous person almost all the time, but you might not gather that from some of my better poems. But I'm really happy, especially the last year and a half that we've been married. Ottawa is the coldest capital of any nation in the world, far colder than places like Moscow and so on. And the Innisfil Road is just a bit west of Ottawa. The hawk by the Innisfil Road. The hawk by the Innisfil Road has only the white-footed mouse in mind this November morning. Only the mouse and the hunger and her constant need to hunt. She had perched near a ruined silo until some movement, some hint of color in the field below drew her down to the brown stubble, to furrows left in last night's snow. The game is over in an instant. A greater, more powerful hunger is fed, and the hawk returns to her silo to watch again, knowing the winter will be long. On the Innisfil Road, winter is always long. Already the clouds suggest more snow. The creeks freeze up. Over gleaned field and milkweed verge, a hawk's wind scythes air to shards of ice. The Tantramar Marsh inhabits the isthmus between New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. And I was out there once because I wanted to camp near John Thompson's burned-out house, where he perhaps committed suicide by setting the house on fire with himself in it. At any rate, whether it was suicide or an accident, I was directed to the foundations of the house and camped out there, not realizing that this was the peak of hunting season. Tantramar. At dawn, the marsh is a cauldron of hunters, its air shredded by guns, reverberations filling these scant woods, the late autumn sky. Everywhere the white hand of frost has etched its designs. The tent ropes are frozen. The grounds become iron, a bone chill of stone. Almost too dark to pick out the ducks coming in low over salt reach and scrub, yet the firing continues while I strike tent and hike back to the car parked on gravel. I make it to High Marsh Road, the rising sun still buried in grass heads, fitful with wind. Driving to Sackville for coffee, I pass farms where baled hay packs barns to black rafters. A bitter season. Steers stand steaming as sunlight strikes hide, hooves stamping frozen mud. Beeves out on the marsh, a savage business in which only the best bulls survive. Thank you. I notice that some of the men here tonight are about my age. And if you grew up in Pittsburgh and you're about my age, perhaps you lost your virginity in McKeesport in the red light district. Yeah, good old Brick Alley. An astonishing thing happened, because where they had all the brothels, now it's all nursing homes and hospices. So I wrote this poem in honor of my father. And I'm reading it tonight because it's a favorite one of Michael Worcester's. My father sits in a wheelchair in a nursing home where whorehouses once overlooked the Youghiogheny River. They were black and naked, and I was 16. The street of women was another world, with dark nippled breasts glimpsed through windows, and the grief lust spends like money in the long night of rivers. The Negro whores are gone now, as is that boy so eager to escape innocence at any cost. All is lost in rivers whose fresh waters join the sea in an embrace of salt. The National Works is shut. The men who bought young women long departed. Blackness fills the cathedrals of steel, eats livers, lungs, the battered kidneys, and the faces where flowers of darkness bloomed with pride and open hearts. Tonight my town lies empty, like an aging heart that does not know whether to beat or stop. My father has white hair and sits in his wheelchair, unable to speak. His tough exterior is cracked and brittle. His skin falls off. Flakes of it cover his pants like dandruff. From the old folks' home, he looks out over a river he cannot remember is the Youghiogheny, while his spirit prepares to travel to a world he cannot know. It is a journey across another river, and even now the boatman waits, his skiff rocking on dark waters. Once my father's eyes held the glow of Bessemer converters, held the orange dust covering cars and trees. Once his eyes held a kind of strength. What I remember is the orange dust, his hands holding shears to prune hedge and cherry. I remember men going down into dark women on paydays by the riverbank. I remember wanting to be a man. I sit with my father watching men in uniforms and helmets smash each other down on TV. Steelers versus Browns, the score tied. He stares blankly and does not know, cannot follow the savage beauty of big men running, frantic as knives, through October's sun.
Oh, thank you.
My final poem is called Sonata of the Rose. It consists of 6 parts, each part having its own subtitle, and each part containing 4 stanzas of 3 lines each. And I use the image or symbol of the rose in this poem in the much the same way that T.S. Eliot used the rose in 4 quartets. Sonata of the Rose. A beginning. In the dark of the forest, the moon's utter face, slowly between trees. Take any voice and follow it to where the trees lead down to the river. If you open the door in the water, stars will flow in, carrying their silence. It's best that we speak softly now that God has extended his forgiveness. Darkness. The first light teaches us when to move, which direction to take across marshes. At dawn, the purple finch sings outside the bower his wife inhabits. In the heart of an oak, the uncarved mask only birds know is there. How will you preserve your secret understanding when night draws close like a thief? Midsummer. A lake trembles as the moon, pulling its gypsy cart, follows the sun. What will you follow when the sun stands on a knife point, calling the birds? Silence rises from old stones. We wait for God to command the grass to sing. On the summer peaks, the music stars play on flutes carved from bone. The journey. How the bridge soars bank to bank, as graceful as a gull rising into morning. Sunday's bells shake their notes upon the wind, iron seeds of iron flowers. Within the silence, a voice that was always there, the sudden joy of discovery. Every journey begins, old hands clasping an old heart, the gate swung wide. Astray. At high summer, each rose draws its flame from the brass sky. What good are prayers our tongues cannot speak, or songs our hearts refuse to sing? Years from now, someone will find the bread still warm, the kitchen door ajar. We are lost on the August mountains. Below in the forest, the unknown rain. Encounter. One sometimes discovers what one has stopped looking for revealed in darkness. Old friend, within the lake's mirror, I touched the moon's white hand. During the long summer, carp turned to gold, each body a radiant sun. Fire or rose? Fire and rose? The corolla of flame yields new life. Thank you. Thank you.